You've been through one diet after another, maybe for years. You've counted calories, pushed through workouts, cut carbs, and still the weight came back. It's exhausting. You've been told it's about willpower, but really, it's about science. With Voy's weight loss program, we combine medication with expert support to help you reach your goals. We don't believe in one-size-fits-all solutions. Voy's medication is personalized based on what's right for you. You'll have a full care team behind you, from Voy's clinicians checking in on you to a personal coach keeping you motivated. And with the Voy app, your team is always just a tap away, anytime, anywhere. Join over 100,000 people across the UK already seeing results with Voy at joinvoy.com/podcast. Unsure if it's right for you? Check your eligibility today at joinvoy.com/podcast. Treatments will only be prescribed if deemed appropriate.
I'm not switching my team to some fancy work platform that somehow knows exactly how we work. And its AI features are literally saving us hours every day. We're big fans. And just like that, teams all around the world are falling for Monday.com. With intuitive design, seamless AI capabilities, and custom workflow, it's the work platform your team will instantly click with. Head to Monday.com, the first work platform you'll love to use.
Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlossophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlossophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. We're back and we are ready for another exciting episode, and I am your host, Eddie Villanueva. Alongside me, as always, is the ever-standing, ever-straight standing because his back is... There's a whole thing I was going with because I had a bad back for the last couple weeks. Spencer's here, everybody.
Yeah,
Spencer,
I'm here.
Standing up tall.
Standing tall and strong and... Yeah. And also with us, too, is intern manager, managing intern, Amy.
Yes. My back's okay.
Yes, you all, too, are standing
up straight.
Yes. She's got a good back, apparently.
I'm upright. Yeah.
We have had an interesting last couple of weeks as we have been kind of dealing with, well, I've been dealing with a little bit of a health issue with my back, but now I'm back. And my back's back. So we're ready to kind of get things rolling. We have a great show in store as we're going to be touching upon this month one of the most prolific writers of our time, and that is the one, the only, Mr. Stephen King. So stick around as we dive into our first leg of his celebration this month, as it is his birthday during this month. Oh. And we're going to highlight that with one of his most prolific works, with a review of Maximum Overdrive. So stick around as we dive into that. But before we do, Spencer, give us them opening credits.
Tune into brand new episodes each and every week.
When Eddie and Spencer and I aren't hurt or something else.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry for the last 2 weeks, guys.
We're on all your favorite streaming platforms and on our website at filmlossophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlossophers and on Twitter and Instagram, and Threads at Filmosophy 101. Also, we're on Blue Sky at Filmosophers Podcast.
That's right. We got a website. And if you head on over to filmosopherspodcast.com, there we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills, and chills. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to that page, that website, and you'll find all of our good stuff there. And check it out. You can also find us wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, and Amazon Music. Tune in there, wherever you download your podcasts, and listen to us as we stream. And we'll give you the social links at the end of the episode. I'm super excited. We're back. Again, we have been out for a little bit, and it's been a little bit of a uphill climb for myself. I did have a back issue 2 weeks ago that kind of put us out of commission, and unfortunately, it just really threw us for a loop. But we are back at a high time where one of the biggest celebrations that we've been wanting to do for some time, but we've been wanting to make sure the time was right. And we also wanted to make sure we covered as much Star Trek as possible, because Star Trek is obviously sci-fi, gospel.
And now we're firm believers, all three of us. Yeah. So now that we have time to transition over, we're going to be doing that. But before we do that,
no,
we got a game.
It was all a lie beforehand.
You called it. You called it, and I was not a believer. And I had faith that
this is what you get for being a non-believer. So we are playing a game called Keep or Yeet.
Okay.
Four letters, one word, yeet.
I appreciate that shout out to...
is it one word or one...
It's
four letters,
one word, yeet.
Intern Sarah loves... there's a wrestler on WWE. His name is Main Event Jey Uso. Mm-hmm. And he's not... See, the crazy thing is, kind of an aside, he's not really a very... Like, he's not like what you would think as a wrestler, like a prolific wrestler, but he uses that word constantly, and it's become like a whole thing with him and his crowd interaction. So anyway, back to the game. So what we're going to do is, this is going to be a group effort, folks. Okay. This isn't even really a game.
Is it because the last time made you sad, and so you're like, oh, they need a group
project? No, the last time made it confusing. That was with me and you and intern Sarah. So this game, we are going to talk about, I'm going to give you ultimately two, let me kill the music. I'm going to give you two particular actors who or actresses in a unique role.
Oh, Lord.
You can only keep one, and the other you have to yeet. Aww. This isn't a technically like a scoring game. This is more so like just what are your thoughts on these particular actors? So we're going to pick iconic people who have played iconic roles.
Do and we have to come to a consensus on our yeetness?
Well, this is me to you two. So you guys can have your own choices, or this is just opinion based.
Okay. So this really isn't, this is, okay.
This isn't so much a game, but
it's not super fight, but this it's
is,
getting there.
This isn't so much a game, but this is to pretty much create division within our fans of like who's actually really in the know and who isn't. So, All right. So I'm going to throw you a real easy one right off the bat. Are you guys ready?
Mm-hmm. We'll try.
All right. First one. Keep or yeet?
Okay.
Hugh Jackman's Wolverine and Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man. Which one we keep and which one we
yeet?
Is
this overall or is this in, here, a, in just, their like their initial outing?
You can only keep one. The other one, like, if you're looking at the entire roles as whatever, you could only have one in this current universe. One could have only existed. Let me take a sip of my coffee.
And that's just them as the character and not them as the actor.
That particular actor playing that particular role. Because it's like saying, like, could you see the lone gunman in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly be played by anybody else other than Clint Eastwood? So it's kind of like those particular iconic actors who play iconic roles and have made it ultimately themselves. So in this particular case, we have two very key individuals in the comic book cinematic universe who made the role pretty much their persona, their themselves made the whole entire persona of the character.
Hmm.
Spencer?
So I think I would probably keep Hugh Jackman only because I think with the MCU, they really built off of what came before it. And if you start taking that away, I don't know what version of things you're going to get.
Interesting.
Because, like, you might get still Robert Downey, but I don't know if he's going to, if that's going to be like the same stuff, if it's the same time frame.
Yeah.
Like, you're changing a lot. So I'll keep the earlier one because you know it's going to be probably the same.
What about you, Ames?
Hilariously enough, I'm actually going the same with Spencer.
That sounds like an easy choice.
Yeah. It wasn't an easy choice because I do love what Robert Downey Jr. Mm-hmm. has brought to Iron Man, as well as building and consistently working through this arc as a whole as Iron Man, and the just literal, like, not just gung-ho-ness of what Iron Man 1 represents for Robert Downey Jr. and for Jon Favreau, but like the really deep and personal stuff that goes with it. However, in the other camp, we have Hugh Jackman, who has been playing the same character for more than, what, two decades?
Yeah.
And he has created such a and it's not even a stigma. He's created such a niche for himself as the Wolverine that it is very hard to separate him and the character.
Okay, next one. Here we go.
I think I was done.
I'm like, can I mute her now? Can we just, wow. You were going long. This isn't supposed to be like a...
She's throwing her heart out here. And I'll tell you what. You're just trying to mute people.
You can throw your heart out just a little shorter. Here we go. The next one.
I have a big heart.
Keep or yeet?
Yeet.
Okay. Sigourney Weaver's Ripley and Carrie Fisher's Leia.
You who
that is you, so you unnecessarily mean.
That is so mean. You hoochie.
You can only keep one, and you gotta yeet the other.
Either way, they're getting blasted.
And nobody can see this, but I got to do the yeets. Yeet. Okay.
No, not with arms. Not with arms. This is rude.
This is hard.
This is aggressively rude. Do you know what? My heart belongs to Carrie, unfortunately, as much as I love
you're
Sigourney.
You're yeeting Sigourney Weaver?
You did what? You
it's either
this.
Carrie Fisher or Sigourney Weaver. Don't act like, how dare you?
I'm trying to understand the thought process.
No, you're not, because you cut me off in the last one.
Excuse me, after you went on for 5 minutes.
It wasn't 5 minutes. This was about a minute.
So, okay, so you're saying you're yeeting Sigourney and keeping Carrie Fisher.
Yes.
Okay.
Gary needs her.
Gary needs her. All right.
I really hate to do that, but I feel like I need to do the same thing.
No, of course.
Because, but it's Sigourney Weaver. That makes me upset.
Right?
Especially that Alien franchise is iconic.
Exactly. And just, no. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, okay. I guess we're both on Team Fisher.
All right, well. That sounded like it took a lot out of you both.
I don't like that.
She was a mental health advocate, and you're putting us through mental strain.
Yeah. All right. You guys ready for the next one?
Yes. No.
I hear such excitement.
Gary would not be approving of this.
All right. This one's kind of a little bit of a brain teaser, but follow the logic here. Harrison Ford's Han Solo.
Okay.
Keep or yeet. Harrison Ford's Han Solo. And Harrison Ford's Indiana Jones.
I knew
you were going there. I will keep Dr. Jones.
I will keep Dr. Jones.
You would yeet Han Solo? I'm asking.
Listen, of the two.
Look, you can't hate the messenger.
I would yeet Han Solo, even though he is very distinct in who he is in that universe. It's Dr. Jones, man. Mm-hmm. We keep Dr. Jones.
Can't I agree with her 100%. Like, especially since I don't have to worry about, like, you know, Han Solo erasing Indiana Jones in that scenario.
I knew he was going to do that, but he goes, follow the logic. I was like, no. No, this is just rude.
Okay. Wow, I didn't know you guys were going to be so angry about it.
What were you expecting? Lollipops?
Yeah, yes, actually. It was. All right, we're moving into a different genre on this one. Here we go. Keep or yeet?
These are Doctor Who. I'm going to be so mad at them, too.
Robin Williams' Genie?
Oh, no. This is going to be bad.
Versus Mike Myers' Shrek. Keep or yeet?
I'm sorry. I just keep imagining some other person in Shrek.
It was Chris Farley. It was supposed to be Chris
originally
Farley.
Originally, it was Chris Farley. They actually have some screen tests. Well, not screen tests, but like him audio recording? Recordings of him trying.
Oh,
but the design of it was completely different.
Yeah, it would have to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you have to keep Robin Williams.
You have to.
And like a lot, it's like some of those later Shrek movies weren't good. So, you know.
I mean, the second one was a little interesting. Or no, the third one was one that was...
Third was the one that had Justin Timberlake.
The third is the one that had Justin Timberlake?
Second one was when they went to visit the parents, and we met Julie Andrews.
Which is great.
And John Cleese as her parents. And I was like, thank you. This is acceptable.
All right.
I'm on the same boat. We have to keep Robin Williams.
How about we go a little classic? Okay, let's do this. Here we go. Keep or yeet? Mm-hmm. Bill Murray's Phil from Groundhog Day versus Chevy Chase's Clark Griswold in Christmas Vacation.
I need to recuse myself because I've never seen Groundhog's Day. Wait, no, I have seen Groundhog's
Day. You
have
seen Groundhog's
Day. I'm thinking of, what's the one?
Wow.
Caddyshack. Sorry, I got
to mess up. Completely different.
So guess what I'm picking? I'm keeping Griswold. But that's me.
You've seen Groundhog Day.
Yeah, I know.
No, I'm stating you've seen it. Do you recall, like, a lot of that movie?
Yeah. I really like that movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
I don't want to get rid of that movie.
You're getting rid of him as the character. That was the thing that he
had
said.
But at the same time, could you see anybody else play that role?
Yeah, who else was, like, kind of a jackass at that time? Oh gosh, but I don't want to see that.
I don't think anybody does.
That's how we got the Vacation movie.
Yeah, I'm keeping Groundhog's Day.
Groundhog's Day?
Yeah.
It's our first delineation. Yeah. Yay.
There you go. One more. Uh-huh. Last one.
This is not a conversation starter. This is just trying to get us, like,
no,
divided.
This is to see where you guys is. I mean, hey,
is how you separate the nation.
The nation of domination. All right, here we go. Keep or yeet. And I'm kind of sorry, but I'm not, because I really want to see where you guys fall on this one.
Oh, no.
I don't believe you're sorry at all.
This is a thespian showdown, if you will.
Would you rather keep Sir Patrick Stewart as Xavier, or would you rather have David Tennant as the Doctor?
No!
Close.
No!
Close. Patrick Stewart's Professor X versus Ian McKellen's Magneto.
You hoochie.
Her in that word, I swear.
You can't have one without the other.
They have a delightful friendship.
They do.
They're both sirs. We're allowed to keep our sirs. We have to at this point.
I'm not like executing anybody right now. I'm just telling
really?
You.
Really? It feels like you're trying to murder their friendship.
No, none of the above.
Yes. Yes. No. There is... I don't want to see anybody else.
I know.
I truly do not.
I
got to keep one and yeet the other.
I will keep Sir Patrick Stewart, which I'm sure is not super surprising for me.
Well, I mean, from a Star Trek standpoint, I would understand.
I want to keep Sir Patrick Stewart.
Mm, so you would both yeet Ian McKellen.
Well, here's the thing. As long as I get him as Gandalf...
But we're not talking about that.
But exactly. The problem that we're running into is literally they are like two halves of the same sandwich cookie. We need them to balance this. And you're just like, I'm going to make one go away. Oh my God, I don't want one to go away.
This is all hypothetical.
Yeah, whatever, wizard.
All right, you know what?
We know.
One more.
What? That Here we was go. Our one more. My soul hurts.
David Tennant's Doctor versus Matt Smith's Doctor. There we go. I'm throwing it out there.
What's the answer, Spencer?
I got to keep David Tennant.
David
Thank you.
Tennant.
Thank you.
I like Matt
and
Smith.
All is right in the world. There
oh,
we go.
Shush.
There we go. So, again, this is just...
What was the movie where they got sucked into the TV and it was all like...
Stay tuned.
That movie was amazing.
That's amazing.
This
John Ritter.
Like this needs to be as far as that.
It probably is. This is all royalty-free music.
I actually did watch that movie, but I just never knew the name of it. I was like, what is going on?
I also have that same problem.
I think we all have that same problem. But yeah, this was just kind of to see where everybody's mentality is at when it comes to certain key characters. And again, it's not a dig at anybody, except for that last one. That was definitely a dig. But the rest of
it was
them.
A dig at me.
But
it's
again,
companions. It's those companions, man.
They are very good companions.
So
those companions.
But speaking of mismatch pairs of, you know, somebody going from writing to directing, that does bring us to our focus.
We didn't have writer-directors in that matchup.
Mismatch pairings. That does bring us to our conversation of the evening as we draw ourselves to our celebration of Stephen King in our review, our first ever review of the month regarding Stephen King's work. And in this particular case, also his first time directing.
First and last.
Yes, first and last, directing in his directorial debut of Maximum Overdrive. So we talked about it, and as we were going to be going through this month of Stephen King, we had decided we were going to take the opportunity to highlight some of his more under-celebrated pieces of work. And we're definitely going to take some time to really digest this particular movie as we all got a chance to freshen up on it and see it as of recent. So this ought to be a very interesting conversation. So before I go any further, Mr. Spencer Williams, would you mind giving us that official synopsis goodness?
After a comet causes a radiation storm on Earth, machines come to life and turn against their makers. Holed up in North Carolina truck stop, a group of survivors must fend themselves against a mass of homicidal trucks. A diner cook, Bill Robinson, emerges as an unlikely leader of the pack, attempting to find an escape plan for himself and the survivors, who include his boss, Bubba Henderson, shot, and a newlywed couple.
So, quick note about the synopsis. Mm-hmm. I found one on the official website for this movie, and it said a whole thing of while a meteor passing by with a UFO using the meteor as a cloak and all. I'm like, where the heck did it say any of that in there?
At the end.
Yeah, at the end of the movie, but it's like
the beginning.
But at the beginning, if you're coming into this and you see this synopsis, you're like, oh my god, there's UFO, there's aliens, okay, cool. And you go and see, where the heck are the aliens?
This movie is like if you had Will Smith's Independence Day, and then you didn't even interact with any of the elements of that movie, and you were just following these random people.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, without a doubt. Written and directed by Stephen King, the film stars Emilio Estevez, Pat Hingle, Laura Harrington, John Short, Yeardley Smith, and Christopher Murney. A couple key pieces of info about the movie. In the movie trailer, Stephen King said he decided to direct the film himself after writing several because he wanted to see, quote, Stephen King done right. He stated, if you want it done right, you have to do it yourself. He later admitted that he was, quote, coked out of his mind.
You didn't need to admit that. It was obvious if you saw
it. It was very obvious.
Yes.
End quote. During production and often didn't know what he was doing. He remarked that he'd like to try directing sober someday. In fact, when asked why he hasn't directed a movie since this one, Stephen King typically responds with, just watch Maximum Overdrive. How iconic of a type of effort do you have to have in a particular movie where people can just say, well, what's going on with your career here? Or why haven't you just see that one movie? You don't even need to see a film. Don't go check out my movies during the 80s. Go check out my acting during the 70s. Go check out my writing during the whatever. He's like, go see this one movie. This one movie has all the answers you're looking for. That just speaks volumes of what this movie had ultimately done to his entire career. Another key piece of information, which I thought was pretty interesting, it's been long rumored that George A. Romero ghost-directed a large portion of the film while Stephen King was seeking treatment for his cocaine addiction. Many fans of Romero's work have noted that the film features many of his distinct camera angles and editing choices. While King has never admitted this, he has mentioned that Romero was constantly on set and King would frequently ask him for advice about directing. I hear that rumor, and unfortunately, sadly, George A. Romero is no longer with us, but that's a very interesting thing to want to really attribute credit to. I don't think if there was ever an opportunity where someone was like, hey, I heard you actually directed this movie or you actually did this. If that movie was as bad as Maximum Overdrive, I would stay as far away as possible, which is probably why there's never been any true connection to this movie stated in concrete evidence. No one's ever mentioned or there wasn't a production assistant that's like, oh yeah, George actually did direct most of the scenes. If you take a look at the last half of the movie, this is not I think for the sake of George A. Romero's career, his posthumous accolades, I think it's a good thing that nobody said anything.
Yeah, no, I would keep real hard to try to keep that movie off.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure his estate is like working like overtime on this with now that he's not, well, since he's not been here at all the like horror cons and all, like, nope. Like, there's always a lawyer in the audience. It's like, nope, this never happened. It was not the case. last but not least, on July 31st, 1985, while shooting in a suburb of Wilmington, North Carolina, a radio-controlled lawnmower went out of control and struck a block of wood used as a camera support. Used as a camera support, shooting out wood splinters, one of which hit director of photography Armando Nannuzzi. Wow. Armando in his right eye. Filming was halted for 2 weeks while Armando underwent surgery, after which he returned to work. While the doctors were hopeful that he would make a full recovery, an infection set in after the end of filming, causing him to lose the eye altogether.
Oh my gosh.
Nannuzzi sued Stephen King and Dino De Laurentiis.
I think it's Laurentiis.
On February 18th, 1987, for $18 million in damages. The suit was settled out of court. That is insane. If you're talking about a movie, you're filming a movie about machines, you know, being ghostly controlled, and then a machine ultimately goes haywire. Machines that are ghostly being controlled and try to kill people, and then a machine on set actually almost kills somebody by shooting something into their eye. That's kind of like, I feel like that's an omen. Like that would have been like the immediate mention of like, well, Steven, this was great. I think you should stop, you know, halt production.
He's on cocaine. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
He's like, as we are about to talk about NC. Hey.
So talking about this movie, and obviously as we talk about this particular month, you're going to kind of see a kind of theme, if you will, when it comes to the movies we choose for this particular month. And a lot of them aren't really just because they're ridiculous movies. A lot of them are because they're not really talked about. They're not really, you know, mentioned in many of the circles of people who, you know, celebrate Stephen King and whatnot. So we're going to really be doing an opportunity to share those types of thought, those movies with you, as well as our thoughts on them. And of course, obviously, no, you know, there's no reason to omit any kind of spoilers because it's been so many years. So, if I turn on the sound, yeah, spoiler alert. So, so let's kind of talk about expectations when it comes to,
just to tag on to your spoiler alert.
Yeah.
I'd almost say for this movie, it doesn't matter because even if you listen to this entire episode without seeing the movie, you could still watch it over like after the fact and still have a lot to see.
Oh, 100% without a doubt. So, let's talk about expectations, not just expectations, but let's talk about our expectations in the mindset of like Stephen King movies. So I want to start with Amy because I believe Amy might be the well, I believe you might be the least experienced when it comes to a lot of his works and movies. So where does a lot of your experience lie within the Stephen King media compendium?
Well, when I was five. Somewhere between 5 and 9, my first experience with Stephen King was I saw Tim Curry very briefly in It, and it scared the bejeebers out of me, and I avoided him like the plague.
You avoided who like the plague?
Stephen King.
Stephen King.
I didn't know if she saw Tim Curry.
No.
He lived next door. I just avoided him like crazy.
Oh, no. I wouldn't avoid Tim Curry. I'd be like, can I be your friend? So when it comes to Stephen King, more as of late as I grew up, especially now in these years of how old I am currently, I've seen much more Stephen King. Also going towards his, Stand By Me is a perfect example that I hadn't seen Stand By Me until I was in my 20s.
I thought you only saw it like about 5 years ago.
Yeah, in my 20s. Wink.
I was like, wait a second. I was like, hold up. Let me check the research real quick since the intern is talking. Yeah, that is false.
Hey, I can be however old I want to be. But when it really comes down to it, yeah. So things like Stand By Me. I had just recently, literally in the last 5 or 6 years, saw The Shining, but I also followed up with Dr. Sleep. Mm-hmm. Both of the new It movies. Still haven't seen the original after. What happened? I was working on it. Okay. And then I've read actually more. I think I'm about on par with reading a lot more of his short stories, or when he's partnered with people to create short stories or novellas.
Well, so to kind of bring it back to the reading part, because you actually were the one who had mentioned the Gwendy's Button Box. Mm-hmm. Which has been a book series. It's a trilogy that came out within the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. But it's one of his more unique writings because it's like you said, it's partnered with someone else, another writer.
Yeah.
But you read those ones, full novels, not just short stories.
Yeah. Which were great. It also kind of gave me a little more of an understanding when Castle Rock had come out
you didn't watch Castle Rock.
I had watched one episode of Castle Rock and I was like, no, it's not for me. But it tied really well in the understanding and the building of that universe with Derry and Castle Rock and kind of that. I saw Misery when I was in my teens. But so to wrap this quickly, yes, seen more as of late, but mm-hmm. not when I was younger and still much to see / read / stuff. Yes.
Spencer, what about you?
So I'm all over the place because there's been some movies I've seen and some I haven't. I had to pull up a list because I'm like...
So quick question before you get into the list.
I'm about to follow that list.
Are there any books?
No.
Okay, I'm just checking. That way that's not anything I can expect at the end of this list.
No, so. I'm just... because like I pulled up a list because like sometimes like... I don't realize it's a Stephen King movie, like The Running Man, the original one.
Yeah,
I was like, oh yeah, yep. I forget all the time that's a Stephen King one.
That's
like,
under his pseudonym.
That's another reason probably why I didn't,
I believe,
make that connection. But yeah, Stand By Me was great. Today's movie, I saw this before, Christine, which was one that like, you know, that was one where I'm like kind of slowly starting to inch behind the couch.
You inch behind the couch for Christine.
I was kind of young when I saw that one. It was one of those ones that's like, it's just on during the day for whatever reason.
I forgot about Carrie.
Yeah, and Carrie, that was the one that like put Sissy Spacek on like my radar.
Yeah.
It's Shining. So that one, it's all of them. Misery as well, which really liked that one. Kathy Bates is amazing.
Oh, so amazing.
And
Green Mile.
Yes, I did see the Green Mile. Yeah, I think that's a lot of... I also saw Secret Window.
Hey, don't knock it, man. That's one of those movies. I got to make sure that's...
And then I think we... Didn't we do a review on The Dark Tower?
Yeah, we did.
And me being real like foggy on the memory of it should tell you what I thought about that movie.
That was the one with the hopeful Idris Elba and the unfortunate Matthew McConaughey.
Aww.
You know, you feel like that should still work.
You would think. You would think, and yet the execution on it was just no bueno.
Nope.
So that's pretty much where you're at.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like I mentioned earlier, no books, no short stories, no nothing.
No.
Okay.
Did you see Pet Sematary?
No.
No. Yeah. I could tell you that one right off the hand. He didn't. So where do I begin? Let's start with
Why don't you list what you haven't seen?
That's okay.
I'm just kidding. Just do whatever you need.
So I've seen pretty much everything that he's been involved with, as well as his adaptations, everything from Carrie, The Shining, Cujo, The Dead Zone, Christine, Children of the Corn, Firestarter with little Drew Barrymore, Stand By Me, The Running Man, which I did realize, it is under his pseudonym. So if you ever look at a book that's written by someone named Richard Bachman, that's Stephen King.
Okay.
That's why not a lot of people knew at the time, like especially during the 80s, like, you know, it's an adaptation. Oddly enough, the Arnold Schwarzenegger adaptation is more of a inspired by, as it doesn't really follow a lot of the main narrative of the book or the short story, I should say.
Do we know if the new one
is? Oh, yes, it is.
Okay.
It is totally. And I am super excited for it. At first, I'm like, oh, it's the dude from, what was that movie? Twisters.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right. it's the, you know, but I saw the trailer as soon as, I think we talked about it. Like, as soon as I saw the trailer and I saw it was directed by Edgar Wright, I'm like, heck yeah.
Yeah.
It is absolutely on the money. And I'm super excited for it. The Graveyard Shift, Misery, Needful Things, Shawshank Redemption, Dolores Claiborne.
The Stand.
Technically those are made for TV movies.
But they were still movies.
I'm talking about actual. So there was a movie called At Pupil, which I'm surprised none of you had seen because it does star Sir Ian McKellen in it.
Made us yeet him.
Yeah, he's.
You chose to yeet. I gave you the option. I gave you the choice. You could have yeeted Patrick Stewart.
Are you serious? This man just had a birthday and got married. I am not yeeting Sir Patrick Stewart.
Obviously, The Green Mile, Hearts in Atlantis, which is kind of a sequel, or it's an in-universe story to The Green Mile as well. Dreamcatcher was a trip. Dreamcatcher, Secret. So talking about Secret Window. I actually like Secret Window. I don't think Amy's even heard of it, but you obviously have seen it, Spencer.
Okay, so I cannot even really comment on the movie. All I have saved in my head is like Secret Window, no, and that's all I could tell you.
Like,
I have no idea why.
Johnny, the file, just so yeah,
basically. You have Johnny Depp, John Turturro. Who shows up at the guy's house and like, you stole my story. And like the whole, it's such a good movie. And it's like, it's ridiculous. Cause it's like, this would never happen, but you're watching it and it's very fun. 1408, which is a really great story about a haunted hotel room. The Mist. I think we've all seen that one.
You said 1408 or is it 1308?
1408 is the one with John Cusack and Samuel L. Jackson. The Dark Tower, It, Gerald's Game, 1922, Pet Cemetery, In the Tall Grass, which was a very interesting one. I mean, pretty much I've seen most, I would say at a very comfortable pace, I would say I've seen about 90 to 95% of his films.
Okay.
Now his TV adaptations are a whole other element because I did see the Stand, Langoliers. The version of The Shining that he actually was proud of, which was done on ABC.
Yeah.
That was funny because it's actually decent. Desperation. And then there was the ones like, Salem's Lot was another one that I didn't mention. But like there's one called The Diary of Eleanor Rimbauer, I believe, or... what are they called?
Basically, you've seen a lot, you read a lot, you be a lot.
I have, and I'm actually really happy about that. Oh, some of the TV series too, like Under the Dome, that was on CBS for a little while.
Oh, okay.
That's based on a Stephen King book. Mm-hmm. I actually have the book at home. Nightmares and Dreamscapes was really fun because it was kind of like an anthological type thing. The Dead Zone was ridiculous because it had what's his name, the little kid from Breakfast Club, the young guy, the one who ends up being like a jerk in Edward Scissorhands.
Brian, what's his face?
I forget his name.
The one that was the geek?
Yeah.
That got stuck in the thing?
Yeah. He ends up, so in the original Dead Zone, it's played by Christopher Walken.
Hmm.
And he essentially has this ability to kind of, when he touches people's hands, he can kind of see, get a glimpse of what's happening in their lives, almost like what's in the future. And
Anthony Michael Hall.
Wow. Christopher Walken ends up shaking hands with like this senator who's trying to get elected or whatever for something. And he shakes his hands and ultimately realizes that the senator is going to become president one day and launch nukes to create this massive world war that's going to destroy everybody. And so he takes it upon himself to have to assassinate the president with the knowledge that only he has.
Hmm.
It's very interesting. And so they kind of turned it into a running TV series with, what's his name? Anthony Michael Hall, who it's a little bit like he touches someone and gets a glimpse and like, oh, I'm going to help them and figure out whatever.
It's almost like that newspaper show.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
What was that one called? Early Edition.
Early Edition. Yes.
With the cat that would leave.
With what's his name? What's the name of the actor in that one?
I have no idea.
He's the one who was in the Godzilla movies. He's also in the new Green Lantern series.
Yes. Kyle Chandler.
Yeah. Yay! And the cat. And the blind woman that he's friends with, right? Because he's friends with a blind woman, I think. We're remembering all the weird things.
That was an interesting show, though. Let's be honest.
Oh, yeah.
I was running, we were all like, how are you going to help him today?
So, honestly, like, there's a good plethora of things, especially rating-wise. I don't really want to get into the reading because it's also the same as equal footing as the TV shows. Just to kind of put it out there, my family was really big into Stephen King. They read his books all the time. They watched his shows and movies and everything else all the time. And like Amy mentioned, you know, the Storm of the Century, The Stand, The Langoliers, all these other shows that were on TV that were made for TV movies, we would sit around the TV and watch them. So that brings us back to this particular movie. So in this particular movie with Maximum Overdrive, as we mentioned, this was Stephen King's first ever attempt in this. We all got a chance to check it out. And needless to say, we got our, you know, eye full of a lot of things. So let's talk about first impressions before we dig into it. Let's start with Amy.
Oh my gosh. No, that really would. It was my first impression literally was like, oh my gosh, me laughing and sitting up and going, okay. We need to talk about this, and I'm going to talk about this ad nauseum, but I want Spencer to give his first impression too.
I mean, at the end of the movie, the fact that the movie wraps up almost a different movie with just its end title card,
yes!
I was like, this movie is flawless and timeless and a classic. Like, I love it. It's my first impression being done with this movie.
Oh, wow. This had been, so in terms of my thoughts, my first impression, this had been the first time I had seen it in a long while. Mm-hmm. Like, the last time I saw it, I want to say, It was in one of those, you know, usual suspect Fox Saturday afternoon movies. Like, I saw it on TV at one point in time, or I saw it on probably some channel, like might have been Sci-Fi later on in life. But I remember the first time I saw it on TV, obviously, because I wasn't around during that time. But I saw it on TV, and then I don't think I've ever intentionally seen it. Like, I was like, oh, I'm going to put this on. It was always happenstance. Like, I would see it on Sci-Fi, or I'd see it on TNT. I'd be catching it at a certain point where it's like, eh, I know enough about the movie that it doesn't matter where I jump into. It's fine. This is the first time in a long while that I actually intentionally saw it. Mm. And I feel like it didn't really matter if I would have seen it from beginning to end. I still got the same sentiment. This movie is bonkers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's immediately like, if this had happened more recently, this would have easily been in the tabloids, like Stephen King does cry for help movie for but yeah, this was so off the wall and ridiculous that we absolutely have to kind of get into it. So let's talk a little bit about the story. Because obviously the cast of characters are unique, but like, I think the story is more important in terms of our conversation. This story is like,
based on the story.
This story is like, if you saw Chris Farley in his underwear very far away in a field and you started yelling, serpentine, serpentine. I feel like this is the embodiment of that in a story. Like, it just makes sense to me. Like, this movie bobbed left and it bobbed right and it went to this way. Like, I feel like that, for me in my head, best describes what we saw. Spencer, am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong at all.
R.I.P. Chris Farley.
Yeah, no, this movie, like, it literally is all over the place. Like,
yes,
there's a lot going on and also not really. Mm-hmm. There's confusing rules and mechanics set up that are like, yes, it gets confusing on what's even happening, because the top of the movie makes you think like, oh, this comet is affecting the Earth and all machines on it.
Yes.
And then you've got sprinklers going off. And I'm like, well, that's not even electric based.
Yeah.
It's just water.
Or you're seeing like little like handles turning and you're like, that's not
powered.
And then you see things like, well, why hasn't that car moved? Or why hasn't...
Yeah, and why are these people fine in their car?
Yeah, exactly.
Why does the radio work for one person but not for the other people? Like,
yeah. It's like I love a good, like, we set up our rules in a movie. This movie sets them up and then just walks away from them.
Because you know that even at one point in time, you have like the character realization where one character is like, one of the ladies is like, oh, well, you know, the comet is passing over. Do you think that this is the comet's affecting all the things? Well, Emilio Estevez is like, oh, yeah, well, probably. And he goes, oh, okay, well, then we just have to stay alive for 6 days.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, is that the logic? All right, that's the exposition of the logic. Cool. And then you get to the end, it's like, a UFO was found, blah, blah, blah.
Wait, what? The best part is that the UFO was taken out by a quote-unquote Russian weather satellite.
A balloon that was equipped with a laser cannon and nuclear missiles.
No, it was a weather satellite that was equipped, yeah.
Laser cannon.
Like, so much political commentary to throw on a title card.
And then how did you get it up there if all machines
are... Oh, it's been up there. And apparently a satellite is not a machine.
No, it can't be. And it just happened to take down this UFO in a comet that we didn't know about.
Well, plus, I don't understand what it means by the tale of, like, so this thing was just slowly, like, dusting us for, like, 8 days, which... The timeline of this movie, because...
So it says altogether, it says, 2 days after a large UFO was destroyed in space by a Russian, quote-unquote, weather satellite, which happened to be equipped with a laser cannon and class 4 nuclear missiles.
Happened to be equipped.
Okay, approximately 6 days later, the Earth passed beyond the tail of Rhea M, exactly as predicted.
Okay, and that right there brings up me to my next point. So what it was saying is 2 days from the end of the movie, that satellite thing happened. And then 6 days after that, the comet was done, which is 8 days total, which is weird because doesn't the movie start off saying like, oh, this comet is here for 8 days?
It does.
And we've spent multiple days with these characters. And I feel like people aren't doing the math on how many days that should have been left.
I mean, I like the yelling across the fields to Chris Farley to Serpentine.
It feels like
someone trying to do a Jackson Pollock, but not ever seeing what Jackson Pollock did and just missing the mark entirely, but getting something on the canvas.
It's interesting. So let's kind of talk about some of the characters, not so much the actors, because the actors, I really don't want to put too much effort in recognizing the particular actors, but the characters themselves are something to mention. Although I do have to say, the two outstanding performances in this movie have to be the little boy,
The one that plays Deke,
the one who plays Deke, and the the other performer has to be the Green Goblin truck.
What? You're not going to put Wanda June on that list?
Nope.
Oh, no. Wanda June is my favorite character in this movie. We made you! Oh. We made you! Are you kidding me?
Three. Twice.
She runs.
She does that twice.
She was sober. Second time she was it.
We
the fact that her name is also Wanda June.
It took me a second for that. Because then it's almost like between that and like Giancarlo Esposito, at the very beginning, stuffing his pockets with cigarettes and quarters. And he's like standing there and he's like, it's just like, why? Wait, what's... And that whole scene was like, nobody heard the breaking of the glass on any of those pinball machines. No one heard anything else prior to that. Wanda June's... Okay. Okay, let's talk about best performances. I think that's one of them.
Yes.
Ames, do you have another best performance in this movie?
Where are you going, Kurt?
Yardley Smith.
As Connie. Connie the newlywed. She got a man named, you know I can't drive and you yell at me. Like, I love you, Yeardley Smith. Your hair was long and it was so ridiculous and so perfect. And then it was all of the wonderful, just her. And then like, you can't leave me here. Where are you going? You can't go
outside. Don't make me a widow on my wedding day.
The best part was, it was the day after her wedding, so she couldn't have been a widow on her wedding day.
It might have been the evening of.
No. Oh my goodness. Yeardley had my heart. Had my heart. And then for Rando, Brett. Whoever she was that played Brett, which was the love interest.
Laura Harrington.
Her hair changed from like curly I was like, to not curly to amazing. And I was like.
Because I thought I was just like not paying attention. But then I was like, I should go back. And I was like, I won't.
Because she started out and her hair was really curly and she was in a hat and it was very 80s. And I was like, okay. Yeah. And then suddenly it was like smooth on the top, like she shellacked it and it was like tied back. And then suddenly it became like crazy, like flash dance curly. And then it stayed like that. And then just she changes and she's like, I don't want, what is it? Something about her clothes, one of the dead guys touched her clothes and she doesn't want to smell like him. And I was like, what?
Yeah, I know. I did not understand where she was coming from with that. Unless like he was just a heavy smoking Bible salesman or something.
I have no idea.
Right? He was going on about that, like selling those. These Bibles ain't just Bible. They're full of the all great stories from the. It's like, and he's like, holy sh!
And he runs out the door.
Or the fact that he's like fondling the hitchhiker woman.
He's trying to.
I was like, dude. I feel like those are great scenes. I feel like,
oh my gosh,
the other great scene that just really kind of shook me for a second was, it was in the third act when the little boy Deke, notices that the trucks are doing something in the morning, and he goes to wake up Bill, Emilio Estevez, and the other Brett. Woman, and Brett. Who are obviously naked in the cot that they have in the back room. He's like, Bill, something's going on with the trucks. You got to come out and see it. And in the next scene, we see them all coming out of the same room with them putting clothes on. And I'm like, did this little boy stand there and watch them get dressed?
I mean, there was nudie pictures literally plastered everywhere in that room. And
Bill,
I was just like,
put your privates in your chonies so we can go see the trucks. It's like, it didn't make sense. Mm-mm. And it's like, what is happening here? What kind of... And then on top of that, okay. So those are like really crazy scenes that are in this.
The other one that's crazy is the cut from when Brett does something and she just goes, okay. And it just cuts immediately away from her and Bill having Emilio Estevez having a conversation. And then it goes to a different scene. And then immediately they're in bed.
No.
They're getting freaky.
Best scene. So we have that whole like where Brett is trying to explain to Bill the circumstance of what she's doing going to Florida, hitchhiking to Florida. And she does this really weak impression of like trying to cry.
Oh my gosh,
it doesn't work out. And then we transition over a couple, like about 15, 20 minutes later, where Bill finds out that the owner has like a stockpile of guns downstairs. And they're all down there and the owner is like kind of, what's his name? Bo? No, it's
Bubba.
Bubba, where he like kind of calls out Bill for his like, you know, his record, his criminal record. And so they have that whole like 90s dad talking to their kid kind of moment where Bill's like, no, you don't understand. And he walks over and he's leaning on a stockpile of guns. And
yes,
he's like,
Emilio Estevez, yes.
My life is just, and it was like, oh my
and
God.
She's like, cheer up, buddy.
Calculon is in this movie and he's hamming it up. And it made for such a very fun and surprising scene, because up until there, you're like, I think Emilio Estevez might be the best actor in this movie. Okay, this is kind of... And then we cut to that scene like, oh, nope, Emilio Estevez is on kind of line with everyone
else. I don't know. I'm not willing to fault any actor in this movie because I feel like they're acting under duress. So,
are we supposed to be doing this? No, Steven's on coke. Don't worry.
There was one moment I remember because it was the girl who plays Brett and Emilio Estevez plays like Billy or Bill, whatever his name. Mm-hmm. So they're together. And I just remember going, oh, she can't act. Like, and it elicited, because I was watching it with Eddie. He starts dying because I'm like literally trying to take this with like a grain of salt. I'm like, okay, it's gonna be, I'm expecting to be kind of scared. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be.
And mind you,
I've seen Christine.
And mind you, I've seen this movie before. I know the immense stupidity that this movie creates. And so I'm constantly reassuring Amy and I'm like, this is not a scary movie. This isn't a scary movie. You need to understand, this is not a typical Stephen King spooky movie.
But even then I was like, I'm like expecting Christine level at this point, right? Because mm-hmm. Christine, you're like, oh dang. Like, I see those cars and there's somebody that lives by another podcaster. Like, I've gone to their house, Doc. So one of the other podcasters next door, they have a...
Doc of...
Oh, sorry. The Cables Crusaders and Nerd on the Podcast. But they have a neighbor who has an awning, who has a Christine car underneath the awning, and they take off the cover and they'll clean it. And I've come by and I'm like, oh, gonna scoot a little this way. But like this, I looked at Eddie and I'm like, oh, she can't act. And he was like gasping for breath, laughing, because I'm literally going, oh, wait, no, Emilio Estevez might be the most committed to this part, right next to Wanda June.
Wanda June was just having it.
Wanda June came through in a clutch. Oh,
like,
my Lord.
Her whole running out there and like, we made you. What are you doing? We made you.
I love her.
And then when she tried to cook those eggs.
Oh my gosh. Like, I don't know. This
just
woman.
Just a minute, sir.
Yeah. That was just all kind of confusion. But.
Oh my goodness.
This movie is just really all over the place. Because like Amy had mentioned, there was so many different cuts that occurred that you're like, you're going from one scene and then it's immediately like, yeah. And then it cuts to the next scene. Like, wait, where did that yeah come from? Like, the entire sequence of events that happens from the moment that the military car Morse codes that they need
gas. It's called a mule.
I'm sorry, that car, I was like looking at it, I'm like, what even is this thing?
So it's called like an MK something, but it's literally known as a mule. Uh-huh. But it literally, the point of it was to have a gunman that was able to stand there while someone drove over things and just shoot.
Like, there's no armor or anything.
No,
I'm like,
no, that's what it's for.
Like, what?
Yeah. And it's like sending out Morse code. And it's like,
but all the other trucks could have done that. They actually the are better equipped. One. Because they're truckers.
Yeah. Like, and on top of that, if they were able to like turn valves and switches and whatnot, why couldn't they just put the gas pumps in their own tank holes?
Exactly.
But
because the gas pump is a machine, I think.
Yeah, it is.
That's what I was, especially when at that one point the gas pump stops and then blinds Deke's dad, Duncan.
Oh yeah, what the heck?
And then it's magically repaired, the same pump that they use.
Wait,
to
hold on.
Up things.
What I'm kind of realizing, a lot of the pairings have the same first initial.
Yeah.
So Connie and Kurt, Duncan and Deke,
Billy and Brett.
That's unnecessary. Yep.
I was just like, wait,
that's
a
why
second.
Wanda was alone.
Wanda was going to die. I think we established.
Well, they killed Duncan, which was Deke's dad.
Yeah, because he was an idiot.
Right.
I did feel bad, but also I couldn't help laugh at the so Deke and his team, which at the time you don't know that it's Deke and his team, they're playing baseball. They win their game and their coach is, "Doters are on me." And he walks over to the vending machine and puts the money in. And then literally all I kept thinking in my head was somebody put one of those pitching machines in the vending machine because they're shooting out cans at everybody. And then Deke, apparently he's like, "I figured this out." He puts on his catcher's mask. And I was like, "Bro, the rest of you is not covered. It could hit you in the no-no zone very easily."
Well, see, but he was at least a kid, and I feel like that's fine for a kid to make that mistake. It would have been funny.
Well, then the other one got squished by the steamroller.
Which I was very confused by. His bike basically turned on him, and then he got squished, but then Deke's bike was like, "Oh, no, we're cool, bro."
That's what I was...
Because his didn't have the update. That's what happened.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Skynet didn't take over that side.
He didn't have the squeezy handle brakes. Was
that it? Hey, don't hate on those. I had one of those when I was a kid.
Those, I had those, too.
I think that was one of the biggest question marks was the how extended, how many machines and simple machines were included in this list of we've taken over things.
Because I think that never got established in this movie as to what exactly were they like taking over. Because it establishes at the beginning when like you have Stephen King in a role like walking up to the bank, and on the big like marquee sign in lights, it's like F you, and he's like, "Hey, honey, this machine's calling me an a-hole." It's like,
and all it says is on the ATM, and you're like,
okay, so the electronics are in that. Yeah. That makes sense. And then even the whole bridge incident, you're like, it's not a bad scene. It's like, okay, it's establishing that.
Still makes sense.
But then you start getting into arenas where it's like, you know, the machine of like the Coke machine or the soda machine, which it's not. Well, I mean, I guess it's kind of electronic. But then, you know, the steamroller, which is, I don't know if those had electronics in it, like. If they're like old school ones.
Yeah, or, plus this is the 80s. So everything had a lot less electronics than it does now.
Like, to what extent did it need like computer parts in it? Or is it something just a simple?
I can't imagine a lot of those cars back then.
That's what I'm wondering. Like,
well, my other thing was, so when we're in the kitchen at Dixie Boy, which is the name of the truck stop.
Oh, yeah.
We've got the serrated knife.
Like the turkey carver.
Which isn't plugged into anything that goes
nuts. It's battery powered.
Batteries. Like, yeah. But like it had Duracell.
Exactly. And I'm like, and then my brains go in, hold up, and they're like drinking and still eating stuff. I'm just like, how is your fridge working? Mm-hmm. How is your stove working if machines are taking over? I'm like, shoot, how is your air conditioning working, people?
Which I don't think it was.
Apparently it was doing something because they weren't sweating heavily. Oh. Wanda June's makeup did not move, and I know she did not slack that stuff.
I like the logic of the movie didn't really get established. No. So like at a certain point in time in the movie, you're like, all right, well, logic, let's throw it out the window. So what are we, how are we following this? And I think the fact that this movie just continues to create illogical scenes, or like you even get a scene where Emilio Estevez's character, Bill, and Kurt decide to go on this running mission to check on the Bible salesman who is calling for help, but they kind of take off like it's like they're just a couple kids going to the corner store to get some sodas.
Yep.
And, like, and they're bent down just a little bit and running, and you're like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing? And everybody else, all the other survivors are watching from the open door while the big rigs are circling the place. And I was like, all it takes is one just like hit y'all right there.
And that's where you get that wonderful scene with Yardley Smith. And it's like, don't make me a widow on my wedding day. Scene.
Oh my gosh. She is shrieking the entire time.
The whole time.
And it is like from start to finish, because when we first meet them, they're driving down the road and they're talking. They're in their just married car. It's got their names across the bumper in soap. And they're like, I need to go to the bathroom. And they stop for gas. And then you're just like, mm-mm. And she comes up to them, is he dead? And you're just like, yes. Yes, he's dead. You see all the blood. And then they escape.
But well, no. They don't escape because Kurt gets chased down by one of the trucks. And then doesn't she ask, goes, Kurt, are you dead?
Yeah. Right.
And it's like, yeah, he's going to respond to that, definitely.
Well, yes, if he's dead. And then she's driving until they get far enough. When they get to the truck stop, they're literally watching from a weird angle where they have to go down a ditch to get into the truck stop. But they're watching all the big rigs circling the truck stop. And they're timing
and he's
it
like,
for a gap.
You see that gap there? When it comes back through, we're going to gun it. And it's like, no, you're not.
And then they do. They get flipped. Their car gets flipped.
And when it gets flipped, Yardley Smith is just all kinds of complaining. Like, Kurt, I'm upside down, Kurt. It was
and
like
she's sitting in a weird squat position, and she's like, you said you'd help me. Who are you? Like, they open
you
the
better
door.
Not cut me. It was just, it's.
She's another unsung hero.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we have to admit that one on there. I think as the movie continues, I think the first two-thirds of the movie, although there's no real cohesive, like, set of events that goes chronologically, it's still an interesting kind of situation until you get into that third act where They're now communicating with them through Morse code.
Only one, though. Only
yeah,
one.
The only person who knows Morse code is Deke.
I've got a badge in Morse code.
This past summer. And so he has to explain, like, oh, they're out of gas. And so Emilio Estevez does this whole, like, okay, we'll fill you guys up. I don't know what the plan was, honestly. Like, okay, they're going to feed the monsters. They're going to give them what they want.
Which is objectively a bad idea.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And he goes until, like, they're out, and then he gets, like, bullied by another truck to refill their tanks by a tanker truck.
He gets pushed.
He literally gets bullied into doing it. But then the other guy, the Aunt Handy? Andy.
Handy?
Is it Handy?
Is it the black guy?
Yeah.
Handy.
He goes and, like, helps him. And like, apparently Bill is so exhausted and he's, like, out of energy that he's, like, falling over.
Fueling trucks.
Yeah. Like if it just has zapped.
In the Carolina heat.
It was under the awnings of the things.
He should have been fine. And then that's the other thing that I'm like, you had multiple people coming out suddenly and it wasn't just him. It was everybody filling up those trucks. And I was like, y'all didn't get some water or something while you're, like, you're coming out to change, because they're watching you, apparently.
Yeah.
With their headlights, ?
Honestly, I don't know how these trucks are seeing anything, because, like, it's like, oh, the mirror. Yes, I can see. But then it's like also the headlights seem to be like the old Chevron commercials.
Yeah.
Like, that's what... Like,
Chevron,
I don't know.
With Techron, yeah. Simply smarter. Oh, I've seen you in them coops.
I don't know. How, like, again, the logic is just throwing out the movie, because, like, at the end of the near the end of the movie, like, one of the drive-thru speakers starts talking and they're like, humans are here. Humans are here. And I'm like, yes. If that's the case, why did you not just call them on the phone earlier and be like, give us the gas?
Exactly. I mean, and even then, technically with the mule, there's no headlights on that thing. So I'm like, how did you figure it out? And then my other thing was like, you could have not done it. And there's only limited amount of ammunition in that dang thing. It's just going to keep shooting. And you had, as we found out, because Bubba shows up with that bazooka, that there is literally, I'm sorry, it was a rocket launcher. It wasn't a bazooka. I have to correct that. One is much bigger than the other one. That there's sitting on a stockpile of ammunition. And a whole bunch of weapons. And all we see them is used, like, what, maybe two or three?
Yeah.
And I'm like, if you wanted to, you literally could pop all of their tires, like, from the roof.
Yeah.
And light them on fire. But you're not.
Yeah, especially, like, in the times of frame before that, like, little, like, mule thing showed up. Like, they free and clear.
Yeah.
They could, like, have this handled.
Exactly. And then it comes to the question, why is the mule the only one that can beep, 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 beep? And they have CB radios. They could technically even use those. Like, there's so many things. And I do agree. The first two thirds, you're like, okay, this is weird. It's weird. We get to the third act and we're like, I'm sorry, what? Like, what is your solution? How are you going to live? Well, you know, we can get on the sailboat and we could sail to this island 6 miles off the coast that has no, that doesn't, what was it?
Doesn't allow
cars to be on it.
But the thing is, this has been, like, implied that it's not just cars, it's electronics as well. So I'm like, listen, this isn't going to work. Mackinac Island, Michigan, has the same thing. No cars are allowed up on this island off Michigan, up towards the tip top. But there's machines on the island. So I'm just going, what happens when you get there and someone's got one of those electric turkey knife thingies? It's coming for everybody.
Yeah.
For turkey.
Oddly enough, here's the funny thing, because we were talking about this before we went on the air. And Spencer, you mentioned that there's actually another version of this story that was done in a film.
So it's a TV movie. Throw it out there. But okay. So in 1997, they basically redid this as the movie Trucks. I did not actually see this movie, but Stephen King does have a writing credit on this. From what I understand, it's the boringer version of Maxwell.
The boringer
version? Yeah.
You mean it's closer to the original, like, story concept and not the Coke version?
I don't even know what the original story concept is about.
So it says here, Aliens arrive parking in a geostationary orbit over Nevada. Using powers unknown to us, they declare war and use unmanned trucks as weapons.
Okay, see, that makes much more sense why the ice now, cream here's truck the bigger is question. So foreboding.
But here's the bigger question. Is it implied earlier on in the movie that it's actually aliens?
Well, no. I scanned the movie and I didn't see any title cards with words, so it's really hard for me to know what the hell's going on.
That is true.
And Maximum Overdrive, all it makes sound is like it's special space gas.
So the poster, if you will, of this movie says U-turn, like a U-turn, yeah. U-turn, you die.
Yes, we could watch that. And if it's just trucks and cars that are coming to murder?
It's an hour and 35, so I wonder what channel was it on?
Is it an ABC, an NBC, a CBS?
It's a TV, so it just says it's a TV movie.
I will find it.
And it might have been. You know what? You know why we probably didn't see it? Because it's Canadian.
A.
So it might have only just released in Canada.
A.
Canada. A. But that's really interesting.
We can watch it on Tubi. That's where it's happening.
That's where I watched Maximum Wolf. It showed up as related, and I was like, "What the heck is this?"
And actually, I think we saw it on the Roku channel. So either way, you know. We needed those commercials in between.
There wasn't a lot, though.
No, there wasn't, thankfully. I feel like this particular story has... So kind of bringing this thing back to the story of what we're talking about. I think the film actually had... What?
It was on the USA Network.
Oh, in 97?
97.
Huh. Okay. Well... Who'd have thunk it? Yeah. Well, actually, that makes sense now because USA also did the Nightmares and Dreamscapes series. I think Desperation was on CBS. I don't recall. But either way, like, I feel like this story could have been something a little bit more uniquely, you know, fleshed out. By a more experienced director, and everybody has to make, you know, you got to crack a few eggs before you make an omelet. I feel like there was a lot of effort done in this prior to, as far as bringing in really solid actors and performers, so to speak. But I think to Amy's point earlier that she said, the fact is I don't think it was the actors who messed it up or who weren't able to communicate their roles easily. I think it was the direction and the writing of those particular scripts that made it difficult for them to convey exactly where the characters, I guess, motivation stem from.
Yeah, so. Which is a bit of a problem when most of the menacing cast is silent.
Except for that ice cream truck. That ice cream truck. Okay. If I want to talk about, like, just in the ridiculousness of it. There is a section where Deke is kind of semi figured out. I guess he's racing from the baseball field, and he's going up the street and he's noticing all these dead people, and the sprinklers are just randomly going off in sequence behind him, and you're like, uh-oh, it's more than just the cars at this point. Like, you're trying to figure it out, and then there's just this dead. It's not even the traditional ice cream truck song, and I can't remember it, and I said exactly what the name of the song was because I knew what the song was. But like it's
King of the Road or King.
Yes, King of the Road. Thank you. That helped a lot.
Which I was surprised. I'm like, why is that even in my brain? I don't.
Like, right.
It looks so weird.
But it was one of those shots where I was like, okay, if there's anything to tell me that the cars are actually a problem, that was so well done with just like the sense of foreboding. And Eddie was laughing at me, and I was like, what? I'm like, it's just ominous enough. It's just weird and creepy enough, and it's hunting children.
But it's weird because, like, you take a look at that particular scene, and then you take a look. Have you seen? Oh my god, I'm blanking out. There's a movie with Paul Bettany.
There's a couple of those. I hear he's very well known.
There's a particular movie
with Paul Bettany.
With Paul Bettany, I can find it.
I'm probably gonna say no. Because I feel like I've only seen Paul Bettany in Marvel related stuff.
You didn't see him in Anonymous or Knight's Tale?
No.
So Paul Bettany did a movie called Legion.
Ooh.
And in Legion, it's ultimately about kind of like something about the end of the world, mm-hmm. so to speak. And he plays the angel Michael, who finds out that God is going to essentially do another Noah's Ark. He's going to wipe out the earth and start anew. Mm-hmm. And he's going to allow like these creatures, these things, to ultimately do away with the world.
Eat all the children and what have you.
Well, he's essentially just going to go and kill everybody. And he doesn't agree with it, so he leaves heaven, kind of denies his own angeldom, if you will, his angelness, falls from heaven, becomes like a regular, ultimately kind of like a regular human, because his halo's gone or whatever. I don't know what it is. And he goes to this small truck stop where the last remaining hope of the future of mankind is based on the birth of this child of one of the waitresses. So ultimately, he has to help protect that truck stop and the people in it from everything that's supposed to come so that the baby could be born. And so these demons, I don't even know if they're, I believe they're demons. These demons start coming to that truck stop. But there's this one scene where you see from afar off, a ice cream truck is coming.
Yep.
And it's very foreboding, and it shows up, and it's none other than the illustrious, who is the mocap guy, the guy who does a lot of things in suits?
Well, there's Andy Serkis.
No.
Doug Jones.
Doug Jones, yes.
He
comes out as the ice cream man, and then he's scary. But like the whole,
like the creepy scary, it's so good.
But the effort of foreboding is more in that, where in this, it's like, you got that little water show of the sprinklers going off, and it's like, okay, we're in Vegas. Cool.
That wasn't the foreboding part. The foreboding part was the fact that you're like, and this was the part where when you said like that some believe that George A. Romero did some of the ghost directing.
Yeah.
The way this was set up was very, and again, I'm not a big horror person, but it was very nice and very indicative of trying to build some type of not only like understanding, tension and, but tension. And I was like,
And mind you, there are a couple scenes in this movie where it does that. But the fact that, and I think this is the honest truth that everybody understands, is that those scenes coupled with the other coked out Stephen King scenes,
it
washes out any of the foreboding and dread and tension that it's built, because then you go from there to Brett suddenly crying about something or like something silly, or you get the flight of the Valkyries as a plane just swoops overhead. Like,
and you hear the flight of the Valkyries out, and I'm like, how are you hearing? How can you hear flight of the Valkyries? And he goes, it's coming from the plane. I'm like, the windows are closed.
I said it's the soundtrack. It's just part of that.
And I was just like, the windows are closed on the plane, because Deke is like, it looks like he's listening for the flight of the Valkyries.
Yeah, that's the thing I couldn't understand. I'm like, can he hear that?
And I'm pretty sure the scene was intended for him to be hearing the plane coming.
But all he hears
And mind you, yes.
Like they should play the sound of a plane, then fade in the music.
Yep. Yeah, which I'm pretty sure that's maybe was the intention at the time, and it just never was communicated. Again, looking at this movie as a whole, obviously we know that the fact that this movie was done while under heavy substance abuse, mm-hmm. and multiple directions from either the substance using director or a more prominent director, whatever the case may be, the fact is that we know that this is not his best work, and we know that he knows that it's not his best work. So obviously we're not coming at this in an effort to be like, oh, we're comparing this to The Godfather and oh my god, we obviously know that this is a fun yet not serious movie, and we're taking it as such. And so that does kind of lead me to our roundtable question. Now, before I get to the roundtable question, do we have any final thoughts about the movie?
No, I think we are all good, man, it seems.
Ames, last thoughts?
I concur. I had that nice little opportunity to talk about the thing that I was like, oh, this feels like it's foreboding. And then I went, nope.
So wrapping this thing up, let's go ahead and go to our roundtable question of the evening. And that is, if you were suddenly trapped in Stephen King's world of killer machines, which everyday object would you least want to come alive? Now, because of the fact that we know that the logic that's been established in this movie, or let's call it lack of logic, is that pretty much anything could have been turned alive.
Yeah.
Everything from, you know, an ATM to a valve, you know, thing turning itself on and whatnot, which I'm surprised they weren't able to, like, you know, unlock doors or whatever. So there wasn't really, so out of the lack of that logic, pretty much anything, any everyday object could have been controlled.
Right.
So with that in mind, which would be the least wanted, which would you want least to come alive?
I'm going to go with a stove, a gas stove.
Gas. Yeah.
Because, like, maybe you're not in the room where all the gas is building up and it's just like letting it all in, and then it just switches to ignite and your house blows up.
I mean, the thing I thought too hard about this question literally in the moments he asked, because I was like, well, if it's not for me, there was an answer. And then I was like, if it's directly impacting me, then there is an answer for that one. So,
let's talk about the one that, because we're talking about for each of us.
Yeah, that's so, why I said the one that's
before
not
Amy starts going like, if it's for this, I'm not going to list X, Y, Z, blah, 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 blah.
I didn't say it. Okay, so if it was for me.
It is for you. It's not an F.
For me.
God, this feels like you're trying to squeeze in five answers just so that you can get to yours.
I was just waiting for the electricity, because, like, that controls the thermostat. That controls, like,
everyday object.
But that controls all the everyday objects.
Okay, electricity. That's,
well, to be fair, like, the movie makes so little sense. I wouldn't find that as a valid option.
They turn on the gas. They turn off the electricity. Like, they do turn off the electricity when they're like,
yeah,
you need
because
to
that's
go
how
out.
They're Which, able to.
I didn't understand. Like, how did they hear that? How did they even hear them?
Exactly.
What do you mean how they, oh.
Because it's not like they were yelling. It's like there's no
The
gas.
Phones, maybe?
Oh, yeah, now the phones work.
No, they just listen to them.
See, that's but the thing. There was no guidelines because of the way this world was, and you said in correlation to Stephen King's world and this happening.
Yeah.
And so far,
which the electricity were one of those things.
In accordance to the Stephen King world, this is still covered because we don't know technically. According to this film.
In this film, there's no, when you look at the range of options here, there's no end to the range because it just doesn't ever make sense. And in all honesty, if I was looking at one thing that I would least want them to take control of, it would be the toilets.
That was
like,
the other thing.
Absolutely. Like, without a doubt, I do not want to be without the ability to go bathroom in peace during this situation. Last thing I would want to do is for anything to go the other direction in a toilet. And you're looking
able to do that?
Bidets.
Spencer.
Have bidets.
Spencer.
I know we don't have bidets.
They were able to turn a valve. What else? I mean.
Yeah, but like, I don't feel like that they'd be able to, like.
How do you know?
Unswirl a toilet.
Yeah.
Like, they're gonna Australia this.
Yeah.
They're gonna. How do you know they don't like turn a valve back at the sewer plant or whatever and then send everything back the other way?
Ooh. Oh, that's not the toilet issue. That's like the whole water system.
Well, mostly the toilet. That's what my worry is. Like, I was like, no, thank you. So wrapping this thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table and talk about whether the film passes or fails in the sense of understanding where this movie falls in the, you know, filmography efforts. Filmographic efforts of Stephen King. Does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles? Let's start with Amy.
Okay, so in the vast realm of all things that are Stephen King related specifically to the medium of movies, this thing does not pass on an actual like logical based film level. However,
there's a however.
However, this is a romping ridiculous good time. You will find yourself being so bemused, bewildered, and befuddled, a lot of bees, because it is just so dang dumb. Mm. I think I saw temporarily somewhere that said, if you just turn your brain off for the 96 minutes it's running, it's a great time. And now realizing and looking back at it, looking back at it with that lens, it would be a hilarious great time. So with that being said, as a film, this does not pass. As a shenanigans thing, totally passes. But I'm still going to give it a 2 out of 5 monocles. Wow. I'm giving it some grace because Yeardley Smith needs me to Spencer.
Okay, yeah, this movie doesn't pass like at all. Like, I don't like off the top, but I'm like, what are the rules? What's happening? Like, that's you're gonna fail that portion.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give it 2.5 out of 5. A lot of that really comes down to my love for Wanda June as the best character in the movie. I don't care. I'll say that because she's so ridiculous. But like, it kind of doesn't matter how low the score is because this movie is fun. It's so stupid and really fun that, like, I encourage you to watch it because this could be your new favorite dumb movie where you just watch it and things happen and there's explosions and that's fine.
Yeah.
Just don't pay for it. Just watch it for free.
It's on Tubi.
It's on the Roku channel. I'm pretty sure you can find somewhere where it's like downloadable. You know, not condoning that. Just saying.
Also, if you want to see trucks, it's just on YouTube for free.
Oh, hey. So again, to Spencer's point, this is an absolute just train wreck, but it's the train wreck that you can't stop watching because it's a train wreck of fireworks and you're seeing all the fireworks go off at the same time. And you're like, I should be sad because one or two people probably died, but look at the pretty colors. This movie absolutely does not pass at all as far as a movie. But again, to everyone's point, this movie doesn't have to make sense for it to be a good time. We have seen it time and time again as of late with every other film that's been going on. That is what typically people have called a mindless movie, a movie where you turn your brain off. And we've seen other films that do this at the same time. And so if we honestly want to say that Stephen King originated the effort, you know, hey, let it be said. As far as monocles are concerned, I am going to give this film a 2 monocle score. It definitely kind of made me scratch my brain, but at the same time, seeing a younger Lisa Simpson, a Gordon Bombay, and everyone else in between,
Giancarlo Esposito,
that's right, everybody in this film did give me a good time, and I'm glad to have seen it and shared it with all you guys. So yeah. But that about wraps up our first ever entry into the celebration of Stephen King and Stephen King Month. So this is number 1. I bet you're excited to hear what we're going to talk about next week. But
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it's a surprise for everybody. So, but this was fun. Again, you can check us out over at our website at filmmonsterspodcast.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills, and chills, even other works from the aforementioned illustrious writer, Mr. Stephen King himself. Check it out over at our website at filmosphorspodcast.com. You can also check us out over on the socials page at Facebook at facebook.com/filmosphors and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmosophy101. And over on Instagram, you can check out all of our great extra content, such as Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jane Unseen, which can be found where?
The only place it's ever lived, which is at Jane Unseen on Instagram and Instagram only. And right now, to be brutally honest, guys, I'm kind of hanging out on the Filmosophers page. So you should be excited to find out what shenanigans I might make these guys get up to over there. But yeah, I've still unseen things, so I really need to get on that too.
Yeah, we actually got some fun stuff that should be getting posted this week as Amy and Spencer are going on a field trip to go do something and hopefully report back to us. So keep your eyes peeled on that.
Sobriety varying.
We also are on Blue Sky at Filmosophers Podcast at Blue Sky Social. We're also wherever you stream podcasts over at iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, and Amazon Music. Tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmosophers. Give us a like or a subscribe and listen in. Tell us what you think. Did you see Maximum Overdrive? Did your parents see Maximum Overdrive and tell you not to see it? You should probably see it. But we definitely love to know your thoughts on that. Drop us a comment in the towel section. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We have earned it.
We have.
Yes, please.
This has been a great review. And obviously, we're going to be having a lot of fun this month as we continue to celebrate Stephen King. So we're so glad that you're able to join us in this particular journey. And We hope that you continue for the rest of this month, because I know we got a lot in store. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm managing intern manager Amy.
Class dismissed.
Beep, beep.